I'm tempted to say this morning's subject is Jesus' trial, but I don't really want to use that word because there's so much about it that's illegal. It was a battering. It was an interrogation. What purported to be a trial was illegal. So we're really going to look at Jesus' interrogation. You remember that they had celebrated the Passover. And after that Passover meal, they'd gone out into the Garden of Gethsemane. And the Lord had taken aside Peter and James and John. And there'd been that time when the Lord had been agonizing in prayer, knowing full well what lay ahead. Agonizing. Was there some other way, some alternative to this route by which sinners were going to be pardoned? Their debt was going to be paid, but was there no other way that it could be done? And do you remember how he concludes? Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. He's content to go ahead. And as they go out, he's arrested. And there, late at night, perhaps 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, the afflictions begin. And they begin in last week's passage. And so we'll just remind ourselves of some of the stuff, the things that we went over with David last week. If you look at verse 54 of chapter 2, then took they him and led him and brought him into the high priest's house. They brought him to the high priest's house. Remember, this is at the dead of night. They brought him to the high priest's house. And then at verse 63, and the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. This is the temple guard. They mocked him and smote him. And when they blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is it that smote thee? And many other things blasphemously spake they against him. And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you, you will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then said they all, art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, yea, you see that I am. And they said, what need we any further witness? For ourselves have heard of his own mouth. Then follows the verses that are allotted to us today. And there are 5 phases of interrogation that our Lord goes through before the cross and the crucifixion even begins. 5 phases, the ones we read about in the reading and the ones I've just added as the preliminaries before our passage for today. So I want to look at those 5 phases first of all, and then draw out some challenges and some applications for ourselves. So, first of all, the first illegal interrogation. If you look at verses 63 and 64 of last week's passage, the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. This is the temple guard. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is it that smote thee? Remember, way back in verse 54, they're in the high priest's house. They've gone there. Such is the hatred that the clerics had towards Jesus that they at least permitted the temple guard to beat him. Maybe they took part as well, but at the very minimum, they permitted the temple guard to beat him and to mock him in this way. If you look at verse 66, as soon as it was day, all this was done in the dark of the night. They were beating him, mocking him, ill-treating him. In the hours of darkness. Remember, he's had no rest since the previous night. But then in verse 66, as soon as dawn comes, then they assemble together, the elders, the chief priests, into their council. And there's an interrogation that takes place here, which is not recorded by Luke. But I want to look at all of the Gospels to try and put together a fairly complete picture. So if you go to Matthew chapter 26, Matthew chapter 26 and verse 59. Now the chief priests and the elders and all the council sought false witnesses against Jesus to put him to death. They're looking for a way to condemn him. They know what the outcome is that they want. They want death. Now they've got to find a reason. It's logic inverted. There's no justice about this. And then in verses 63 and 64 of Matthew chapter 26, 63 and 64, Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee, by the living God, that thou tell me whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus saith unto him, Thou hast said, Nevertheless I say unto you, Hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, and coming in the clouds of heaven. Jesus confirmed that he was the Son of God. And now the high priest believes that he has a cause that he can use to execute Christ. Verse 65. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold now, ye have heard his blasphemy. They've now got a charge, they believe, that they can use to justly execute him. And in Matthew 26, verses 67, and 68, then did they spit on his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? That's what lies behind that first phase that we're looking at here of his interrogation in the book of Luke. But notice then, it isn't until we get to Matthew chapter 27 and verse 1 that dawn comes. When the morning was come. And you find the same thing in Luke. At the end of this first interrogation, you find in verse verse 66 of chapter 22. And as soon as it was day, they now convened their council. And they were now going to have what they believed would be a legal trial. All that had happened in the hours of darkness was illegal. It was strictly illegal according to Jewish law. It should not have happened. You cannot hold a trial in the hours of darkness when a man's life is at stake. And so that's why they make a point here in verse 66 of our passage. As soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council. Now they're going to dot the I's and cross the T's. And bring a sentence upon him in the hours of daylight that he might be executed. So we now come to the second phase of his interrogation before the council, before the Sanhedrin. They want him dead. And they believe now that they've got a charge that they can bring before him, blasphemy. But they have to get him to say it again in this formal meeting now in the hours of daylight. And so we find them questioning once again, verse 67. Art thou the Christ? Tell us. Art thou the Christ? They want to get him in the hours of daylight, in the formality, how they love formality and dotting the I's and crossing the T's. They want to get him to say it in the hours of daylight. Tell us, And he said unto them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And it goes on, the interrogation, the battery. And we come to verse 70. Then said they all, art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, he say that I am. Is he admitting? At last he admits it. Triumph. They've succeeded. They've dotted the I's. They've crossed the T's. In the hours of daylight, before the council, they've got him, they say, to admit that he's the Son of God. They can bring the charge of blasphemy. And they can therefore condemn him to death under Jewish law. But now there's another problem. They are, of course, Jews who are under occupation by the Roman forces, and they have no right to impose capital punishment. They can't execute people, and so they have to get the Romans to do it. Now, the Romans aren't going to be very impressed with some belief that they have about God and him saying he's the Son of God. That won't stir the Roman authorities. So they need another charge. So we start again. We've got to find a new charge. And they take him before Pilate. And into chapter 23 and verse 1, the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. But what are they going to charge him with? Well, if you look if you look at verse 2, and they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar. Stop at that point. Forbidding to give tribute to Caesar. If you go back to Luke chapter 20 and verse 25, when they were talking about tribute for Caesar in verse 24, show me a penny, says Jesus, whose image and superscription hath it? And they answered and said, Caesar's. And Jesus said to them, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. They'd asked him about giving tribute. And he'd actually said, give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Whose face is on the penny? It's Caesar's. Give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. So this first part of the charge is an outright lie. That's the way that they're going about things. And then they go on with the charge, and they say that he's the king of the Jews. We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And Pilate, verse 3, asked him, saying, art thou the king of the Jews? And he answered him and said, thou sayest it. He admits it. And then said Pilate unto the chief priests, unto the people, I find no fault in him. Now, there's a gap between verses 3 and 4. And once again, we need to fill it in from another gospel. If you go to John chapter 18, you find that there's another piece of the argument that goes in there. Verses 36 to 38 of John chapter 18. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight. But I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, art thou then a king? And he answered, thou sayest, I am a king. So he admits being a king, but not in this world. And so you see, actually there is a logic to the way in which Pilate immediately then releases him, or tries to release him. Pilate, verse 4 of our passage, then Pilate to the chief priests and to the people, I find no fault in him. His kingdom's not of this world, we've discovered in the Gospel of John. And so we come to verse 5. And they were the more fierce, the crowds more fierce. He stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place. They're adamant. They must get this man executed. Whatever the charge, they don't care. Now, at this time, it's estimated that there were about 500,000 people in Jerusalem because it was the Passover. Crowds and crowds had come. They always did. And that's why Pilate was there. And incidentally, as we see in a moment, Herod was there too, to make sure that everything was done decently in order. So this is getting quite serious. And Pilate sees no fault in the man. His kingdom's of another world. But